When we change our mindsets, we can change our outcomes, giving us the freedom to live the life we want. Welcome to Get Safe's Movement for Change podcast, where we invite industry professionals to speak about changing mindsets on key social, emotional, and societal topics, challenging us to do the same in our own personal lives. Well, welcome back to Get Safe's Movement for Change, Changing Mindsets, Changing Outcomes. I'm Stuart Haskin, founder of Get Safe. I have two amazing people in my room today. It's Lola and Jack Gershfell, and they happen to be married, but they are, I would say, the most interesting individuals that I know because they are always doing something new. So I'll let them say hi real quick.
Hi, so good to see you and to be here. Thanks, Stuart. Yeah, it's an honor to be on this program.
Oh, that's very nice of her. I paid her, but that's very nice of her.
Hi, Stuart. How are you?
Good.
Considering that you've been my instructor many years ago, and right now it's just a pleasure to be on the podcast.
Well, that's very nice. When you hear their background, so Jack, talk a little bit about your climb. I met Jack when he was building this cool computer company, making things easier for individuals in the community or use of business platforms and different things. And then he's kind of moved on to emotional healing with people directly with what he's doing in life is.
Right. Quite a transition, right?
Yes.
Yeah. When I started the company, we focused mainly designing audiovisual equipment, and also we designed equipment for handicapped people. And some of the projects we have, which are very exciting, called AMI's control systems. And that was designed for quadriplegic to be able to control all of their surrounding with just blinking of their eyes just moving their head. And then eventually Lola decided to go to a psychology field. And
so Dr. Lola, right?
Yeah.
Dr. Lola.
yeah. But, you know, so there were two choices, whether we go see a counselor or I just learn about it in school. So I chose the most expensive
way of doing it.
And the longest route.
But overall, just kind of focusing on vulnerable population, focusing on people who have traumatic experiences in their lives and recovery, and focusing on marriages that struggle and need some help.
So you became a licensed marriage and family therapist, correct? And Lola, your PhD is in?
Yes, in organizational psychology.
So two very smart people here.
All right. Thank you.
But how does that work with you guys? Just this is for fun, a personal dynamic. Do you use your practices at home? They're all quiet now.
Actually, we've been married for 38 years.
Yeah,
and no marriage goes without having difficulties. And we've had our share of difficulties. But we kind of had a goal staying together in our life.
Yeah.
And incorporating what we learned at school and incorporating what we learned with the working with other psychologists.
Right.
So we bring it home. And a lot of times it's hard, but it helps. It helps to know what it takes to keep the relationship going. It's a big deal. And with Lola understanding what it takes and me understanding, we still get into our little cycle and dance.
Yeah, of course.
but hopefully it's going to get easier, and then it gets easier every time we process it and figure out what to do next.
Yeah.
I feel like emotional connection, emotional focused approach that we learned and we have been using, I've been using in my business and Jack has been using, has really deepened our relationship.
Oh, nice.
Because we are able to understand that it's not our fault and nobody wants to be at fault, right?
Yes, of course.
It's the cycle that we get into. And then once we understand that we're fighting the cycle, it's much easier to be on the same side.
Yes.
To understand what's going on, who got triggered, how we got triggered, what are the emotions involved, and what do we need to reconnect and feel safe. So that has been a transformational process, I believe, in our life. And not only in our marriage, but in our family has been transformed, our kids, our grandkids. We have 5 grandkids.
I know.
And so are teaching them this process, and they are learning. It's like a language.
Yeah.
It's a language of expression of your emotions and understanding yourself better and relating to others.
Well, I'm going to ask you for tips before we close, because I think everyone's listening going, I need that in my house, you know, because we're both of you guys. Because like I said, you guys are always, you know, so even keeled when you see them and upbeat and happy. And a lot of times when you hear about doctors, they have the worst health. Plumbers have the worst plumbing at their own home. Gardeners have the worst. So it's nice to see that you guys can bring that back into your house. But Tell us on a professional level what you're doing.
So on a professional level, I got into this field of working with boards and teams through my own experience of seeing people get engaged in this drama that is going on in the workplace. And I felt like it was really fascinating to me. So I would go home and like draw these patterns. And slowly I realized it's all about connection. It's all about attachment. It's all about if you feel more secure with each other on an emotional level, you can resolve any problem.
Right.
So I took this approach from what we learned in the clinical psychology and I put it into the workplace. And I see transformation happening and I love it.
Wow.
Because you can just watch from the first session, you can just watch how people are sitting across the table, not looking at each other.
Right.
And through just a couple of hours, just like...
Her body language
You know,
changed.
The body language,
yeah,
the emotions,
awesome.
They can express, they can turn to each other. So the first tip I have,
okay.
The first tip...
Write it down,
is,
people.
...is number one. The bad guy is the cycle, not each other. That's the best thing that I see that people start to feel safe, is nobody wants to be the bad guy. And of course, naturally, we think about ourselves saying that if I'm feeling abandoned and rejected, it's not my fault, it's your fault.
Right.
So naturally, we go into that position of blaming, judging, criticizing, and complaining to people. But we have to realize, the first thing is to realize, is that the negative cycle that we get into, that's the villain.
Right. Agree.
Okay? That's tip number one.
All right. Tip number one, that's one. Jack, you want to... Tip number two.
Oh, that's quite amazing what Lola is saying. I kind of been thinking, what are the good tips to give to people who are just starting out a relationship? Because there's different ways of looking at it and different needs are when you start a relationship, when you just been married, when you in the middle stage in your family growth, and then when your kids live, that's a change in the family. So, and I think one of the big things that come up when I work with couples is how do I do not get upset at my wife? How do I not get upset at my husband?
Right.
How do I stay calm in this moment? And what it seems to be the at work here is that a lot of times what we see on a person's face, it's different what they feel.
Mm.
So, for example, a husband can get angry, but what happens inside... Mm. He is really worried that maybe his wife doesn't love him anymore.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And or a wife gets upset, but what's inside she's saying is, do you care about me? Am I important? So it's an ability to see beyond the anger and beyond being upset is really important. At the time when your partner is upset, that's a time to help them to deal with that stress.
Yeah, I agree with that. I read a study a long time ago. It was regarding how males feel. They come off because of the, maybe society's bravado, like they're angry, but inside they're feeling insecure. You know, they feel like they're failing in a sense, and that doesn't come out. We just mask it with yelling, you know, that's...
Right, and an important part that you mentioned here, insecure and they're failing in the eyes of their partner.
Right.
It's not overall in the whole life.
Right.
It's just in the eyes of their partner, they feel, maybe I'm not good enough.
Yeah.
And they get it this and this and they say, wow, I can't meet her expectations. That's tough.
Yeah.
But we can't say that. Nobody teaches us relationship when we grow up.
No.
And we end up getting into relationship not realizing that what we used to do when we were kids doesn't work for adult relationship anymore.
Yeah.
And people get hurt in a way.
Yeah, it's communication, and that's what life's about.
Yeah.
It's the communication. That's a lot of things our agency is doing is how to communicate, how to de-escalate. Now, I'm going to ask for a couple more tips later, just because Paul and Paige are getting married in 2 weeks. So he's going to be a newbie. So take some tools with you on the honeymoon.
Yeah.
So, which is usually a honeymoon. But yeah, but those are great. Now, you have a company.
Yes,
and your company is?
Level 5 Executive.
And people can reach out and they bring you in to help that emotional connection in the board.
Yes, the board or teams, right, exactly.
Okay. Even in teams, okay.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'll ask you, so tell me a team you walked in that you walked in and going, oh boy, this is going to be a tough one. I mean, no names, just like a...
Well, when I walk into a team, I usually say, wow, this is going to be an adventure.
Okay,
because it's always a new adventure. You see, Stuart, it makes it much easier to deal with any conflict that's happening when you have a map.
Yeah.
And so in my work, I use attachment as a map. So any moments of disconnection, I'm looking at how can I reconnect these people. Yeah. So they're really struggling. They're really not telling you, like, I don't care about this, but they're struggling.
Right.
Just like Jack said, and inside they're struggling for attachment, for connection, for the loss of connection. So when I go in, I'm trying to help to slow down the process, right? So slowing down the blaming, judging, criticizing, or withdrawing, bringing up people back into the conversation. So if you think about interaction as a dance, emotion is the music.
Mm.
So the fastest way to change the dance is to change the music.
So if you can't dance like me, that's going to be, all right, throw it off a little bit.
In order for people to dance, you have to be on the dance floor, right? So if you have people who are not willing to engage, you have to create safety for them. And so this is what I do. So when I get in, I create safety for people so they can start to share their concerns in a way that it's understandable, they're valid, they're heard. And at the end of the session, people do feel much better because now they have expressed, we process the emotions, they understand what's happening for them. And then they can turn to each other and say, this is how I felt. And I want to talk to you. I want to work with you.
Yeah.
But when you get on me like this, I get scared.
Yeah.
So they can become, they can come across from a place of vulnerability.
Do you ever, can you see it happen, like their guards coming down?
Absolutely.
Because it's almost like body language. It kind of opens
up,
versus like you were saying earlier.
People tell me like the stress melts away.
Yeah.
Because they want to be connected. When people work together, they want to be connected.
Yeah.
It's almost like a natural, our mammalian brain seeks connection with people we depend on. So as in your facial expression, in your body language, if you see, sense it, I tell my leaders, might as well tell how you feel because it's written on your face.
Yes, exactly, Right? So is that changing mindset? Because once they start realizing there's a mindset that not everyone's out to get them, that they're, and they start molding and start connecting with each other, because that's how we start inside. We internalize, like I think Jack was saying, that we get inside.
Most of the problems, Stuart, I see that people don't know what they feel.
Yeah.
It's hard for them. It's almost like there's a barrier. There's by the time you get to the, they say, I'm frustrated.
Right.
But by the time you get to the place of vulnerability, like, I feel scared, or I feel sad. I feel alone.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's the place we go into help them to do that in a safe way.
Do you find it harder, and Jack, in your field as well, working with couples, for males to articulate, I feel hurt or scared? Because, you know, as again, as society-wise, we're not taught. That's why.
If I can answer the question,
sorry,
I get this. I get this question a lot, because when I go into a boardroom or a team, there's lots of men, right?
Yes.
So, for example, I worked with one particular board. There was a chairman, the CEO, and the vice chair, and I would work with them to express emotions. And every time I would ask the vice chair, he says, "Lola, don't ask me this question.
Oh.
I'm a very private person. I don't talk about my emotions." And I said, no problem. So after a while, after about 8 sessions we had, suddenly after one of the board meetings, he comes and he says, "I feel dismissed. I feel like I'm not important. I felt like I was shoved to the side." And you look and you see, like, what happened? Well, what happened is he saw us doing it and our mirror neurons duplicate what other people do because it's safe.
Right.
And because he wants connection. And as he was telling all this, as he was sharing how he felt, the best part was that the chairman didn't defend, didn't try to dismiss his feelings, but he said, "What can we do?"
Wow.
And he said, "Just be there."
Wow.
Just be there. And that's, you can
great.
Just feel this bonding experience happening. So now people leave the room much more connected. They don't feel isolated. They don't try to stir these bad feelings and you know, think that the other person doesn't care.
Yeah, yeah. No, and even our little, I was just thinking as you were saying that, our little office, you know, you have conflict. Just even because we're so tight and closed, you have little conflicts. And and giving that opportunity to feel safe, like you said, and connected, you know, and I guess. And then, Jack, you also teach at, you still teach at Pepperdine?
Yeah, I teach at Pepperdine University. I also teach at Chapman University.
Yeah, in your spare time, but Jack does a lot. What classes are you teaching?
In Pepperdine, I teach marriage and family therapy. And I also teach behavior modification, learning theories, and research methods.
Wow. So tell me your favorite class to teach.
Mm-hmm. My favorite class is always couples therapy.
Oh, is it?
Marriage and family therapy. That's my favorite.
The class or doing it? Or
actually doing it both. Doing it and teaching it. That's my favorite because you take 20, 30 students in the class who come in and they want to learn how to work with couples, how to work with families, and they come in fresh and they like a sponge absorbing everything.
Yeah.
And by the end of the class, they go, wow, we actually can do the change. We actually can help people. We actually can make a difference. Mm-hmm. And providing them tools necessary to take people from stressful situations into distress, it's a big deal.
So I'm going to ask you a tough question. Mm-hmm. Have you ever had a couple you felt like you two just don't belong together?
Well, you need to, when you work with couples, you kind of need to meet them where they are. Mm-hmm. If they come in and they try to resolve difficulties and it doesn't come through, we make it very explicit. And we say, guys, you know, it seems like we're hitting a roadblock here.
Yeah.
Maybe we should figure out what's happening. What I find is that when people make their appearance in a session, that means they already want to be close.
Okay.
The mere fact of getting into the to therapist and getting together with them and spending an hour together tells me that they're interested in figuring things out. So I think the position as a therapist is the reason they're here because they're suffering and they want to get better.
Right.
So I would say that in my mind, I never see couples as they should be separate. What I always see, couples who want to be closer, they just don't know how.
Yeah, give them the tools again.
Right. There are some limitations, of course. Like in any therapy, there are some limitations. For example, if there's an active affair, you're not going to be doing couples therapy because you have to. The affair needs to stop. If there's addiction, for example, if there's a drug addiction, if there's gambling, porn, you don't do couples therapy. So there's some limitations of which couples you want to work with and actually bring, reconnect them. But once you pass those issues where you see that couple doesn't have any domestic violence or there's no drug addiction, there's no active affairs, then you just proceed. And
so if there is, okay, say there is a drug addiction, you have, first you say, before this can ever work, person with an addiction has to go get help and be on a, I guess, a mapped out program so that they have some resources, or how would you do that?
Yeah, a lot of times once you determine that there is an active addiction, then you can roll it into the relationship and say there's a reason for addiction. Anytime there's some kind of addiction in the family settings, there's a reason for it. We call it self-medication. Something's happening that people need to go to drugs or alcohol to self-soothe. So a lot of times I would say, yes, you have to go to some kind of drug program. A lot of times we ask them, the partner who is addicted is to go to AA or
addiction counseling.
But if they are not actively participating in recovering from drug addiction, the couples therapy is not indicated. It's contraindicated.
Yeah,
so we need to, in couples therapy, one of the biggest priorities is to protect each partner.
Right.
We can't make a partner vulnerable when the other partner can be hurting them.
Well, and kind of, Lola, as you guys both do, you're kind of mining the mind in a sense. So has that ever popped up in the therapy session? Like no one knew it had an addiction, all of a sudden they popped up, hey, I have an addiction, or I'm having an affair, or I'm having gambling problems, or I'm addicted to porn.
Right. It's always comes up, and you assess the level of the addiction and level of the infidelity. If somebody had infidelity 10 years ago and they just want to come in and tell the truth, that's different than somebody who is having actual infidelity currently and it's active. So when it comes up, there's one saying in a couple's therapy work where you say, make everything implicit, explicit. And that means when you see something, when you talk to people, bring it up on the table, put it on the table so everyone can see that, so we can discuss this. Because if things are hidden, or if there's a elephant in the room and nobody talks about it doesn't move couples toward the resolution. And if it does happen, we collaboratively decide what to do.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. See, you're helping. both of you are peacemakers almost.
But you know, Stuart, you bring this such a good points up, and especially changing minds and changing outcomes, it's a big deal. Because we're not taught how to keep our partners safe in the relationship, we kind of look at our parents, we look at our friends, we look at the society, and we decide what's good and what's not good, what works, what not good works. A lot of times it becomes hit and miss in the relationship. So my recommendation would be for people who are getting married or people who are planning to get married, or even if you just married a newlywed, take 3 to 5 sessions from an emotionally focused therapist on a couple's relationship, and that will save you many years of headaches. And the problem is, by the time we get people, by the time I see people, they're either on the brink of being divorced or they're hurting so much that it's hard to bring them back to and reconnect them.
Well, kind of along that line, because your family, parents have had successful marriages, correct? And so, sort of.
My parents, mine
were, they stayed together, but they yelled. Or my mom was Italian, so she yelled a lot. So so that was my kind of roadmap. You know, that's what you see. And it's like, and not that I'm a yeller. I'm actually the opposite, because if my mom yelled too much, I don't. But it's, but if you see, it seemed like if you see positive examples, that kind of helps you. Because it really, you know, like you said, I agree with you. People should take some informational classes, because you don't really have any tools, you know. It's almost like having a baby just to have a baby, because there's, you have to take a driver's license test, right, to get to drive a car. But you got babies, you get married, and all that without any...
No
real
licenses.
Tools. Yeah. No license.
You know,
no license.
As you talk about this, there's a very good program called Hold Me Tight. And that program is designed specifically for couples. It's designed, it's a 2-day program, and it teaches couples how to keep each other safe, how to make sure that when the conflict arises, how do you resolve it in such a manner that both partners feel safe and secure with each other. And highly recommend. It's all over the United States. It's developed by Sue Johnson, who is a developer of emotionally focused therapy. And it's been very successful. The way you judge the success of any program is looking at the research. And very few programs in couples workshops have research that can validate that actually what you do in the workshop actually works.
Yeah.
And Hold Me Type is one of the few programs that has research behind it and show the improvements in couple relationship after the workshop.
So let me, because you're both in the therapeutic world, you see some people go to therapy forever. You know, they're just 20 years. I mean, it sounds like your goals are to give them the tools so they can, and get tune-ups, of course. I mean, is that kind of a goal for, like, even your board?
Well, for my teams and boards, we do mastering emotional connection process. We teach them emotional connection process, so they do have a map so they can reconnect. And definitely, it's really a very short and brief training.
Right.
So for the 2-day program, we teach it at Pepperdine University.
Okay.
And for the third day, it can be like train the trainer. So a person can teach that into their organizations. And then any time when we work with a team or a board that is having a conflict, it's very brief. You know, I would say like 5 to, even after the third session, people like, oh my goodness, it's like, we no longer talk about leaving, but we are talking about, wow, that's so amazing. And it's very brief approach.
Well, it's nice because, like I said, I like those kind of tools because then people can actually move on and feel. I remember hearing people saying, well, we're going to talk about this when we go to therapy. It's like, we could talk about it now. You know, wouldn't that be good to have the tools to do it now instead of waiting a week till her appointment?
Unfortunately, when couples feel unsafe with each other, and not physical safety, I'm talking emotionally, they won't be able to talk right now.
Right.
So because there's two type of people in the relationship. One is we call a person who is pursuing, okay, and it's a... come on, let's talk to me. You know, I'm right here. Why do you walk away? And the other person who is a withdrawer and say, hey, I don't want our relationship to get any worse, so I don't want to fight, so I'm just going to shut down.
It's not the guy, is it?
Most of the time, 70% of the time, guys are withdrawers.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry. Yeah. 70% of the time, guys are withdrawers, and 70% of the time, women are pursuers.
Right.
Okay. But it goes both ways, right? Yeah. So here's a typical cycle that kind of puts us in a difficult place. And that's why when you say, can we talk it right here before we go to a therapist? In reality, no, you can't. If you escalate it, you're going to get worse. Okay, but once the therapist gives you tools and helps you with tools, then you have what we call hold me tight conversation, where you can converse and reconnect and be close to each other.
We call them bonding conversation in our world.
For your world,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, for my world.
Well, in self-defense, we just call it punching someone. no punching. But
I'm going to go to my Zen place.
But Jack is correct. I think what he's saying is absolutely right. In sessions, you give these experiences where you can talk about it outside.
Yes.
And that's what the sessions are for, is to create these bonding conversations or hold me tight conversations where you can experience, because Franz Alexander, a Hungarian psychologist, said change occurs with new emotional experience. So in sessions, you want to create this new emotional experience where it is safe to talk about it so you can duplicate it out of the session.
Yeah.
Okay.
See, then that's what you want. And exactly. That makes things, that's how you are changing your mindset, changing those outcomes continuously. Because if you have those tools after you have to learn them for sure.
Right. And I just want to make a separation. It's a different process for working with in the corporate world.
Of course, yeah.
Okay. And there's different process working with couples who have intimate and romantic relationships.
Another level.
So there's a different levels of work. But the important part here is that most of the emotional focus work is brief work. And you brought up the point, you know, some clients go to therapists for years and years.
Right.
And some of the modalities do have a process that takes a long time to achieve the results. And there's nothing wrong with this, okay? So it's not like something wrong with somebody who is going for a long time to a therapist. With the couples therapist, when they come to your office, a lot of times they're distressed.
Right.
And they're looking for immediate relief. They're looking for relief now, not 6 months from now or 12 months from now.
Right.
In fact, a lot of times couples come to the office and one person is already halfway out the door.
Yeah.
So if there's no immediate relief, you can see how easily it can just go and people separate into this. So the goal is to de-escalate couple as fast as you can and help them out to get into a place where they're at least safe. They don't scream at each other. They don't argue. And then you can process bonding conversation and connection and put them back together. And so typical process is 12 to 18 weeks. And I like to tell my clients that when you come here, there's a beginning and there's an end. And
I'm happy about that.
Right. And you also have to look at the clients. Not everybody can afford to come to therapists for a long time.
Yeah.
So having that definitive view that, okay, there is an end. I'm not going to be here for the rest of my life. But what's interesting, the research that was done a few years ago shows that when you do a reconnection of couples on an emotional level, the relapse is non-existent. That means once you finish the therapy treatment, you continuously improve. Versus if you do just a behavioral modification, most of the time people will revert back to their original behavior.
Mm.
Okay, so there's different ways. That's why focusing on emotions is so important, because emotional changes, when we experience corrective emotional experience in the therapy, usually they stay with you and they become part of your structure, internal structure, and how you view the relationship.
Well, you're probably just retuning some of the things that we have inside of us and redirecting.
Right, retuning, and we call it a paradigm change.
Yeah.
Because at the time when the emotional experience is processed, we stop thinking the old way. You know, our mind switches, and new mimes appear in your mind. And what you see now when you look at your partner is not the person who is attacking you or person who is running away from you and withdrawing, but you see a person who just needs a connection. They just don't know how.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, it was just kind of relating, because years back, taught a lot of martial arts, and you could see it in a student when they finally kind of get it. Still make the movement wrong, but you see in their head, they go, oh, I should fix this. And I could see you could probably have those moments where they go, right when they're going to say something, they go, wait, maybe I should adjust how and think clearer. So,
I think before they say, they can slow it down to recognize what's happening for them. This is the key.
Yeah.
This is the key. If once you learn how to tune into yourselves, it's much easier to tune into others.
Yeah.
Otherwise, when you numb emotions, when you push them down, you not only push the negative emotions, you push the positive emotions, yeah. And you stop the ability to get in tune to others.
Yeah. So
the signals then gets misinterpreted.
Yeah, we have a program like that that we teach law enforcement how to de-escalate situations with people with mental illness, substance abuse, and development disabilities. And part of our, we used to go slow and steady.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's calm and steady, calm down, only because slow, they started thinking, do I have to fight like a Tai Chi guy really slow? And uh-huh. so slow motion. Yeah, slow motion. So we changed it to calm, but it's the same principle.
Right.
Because
right.
As before you engage, if you can calm and reduce it, it will reduce the escalation most likely because mm-hmm. you're coming in with a clearer mind and everything. So.
Well, it's also hormonal changes, right? Because yes. your brain adrenaline. Excretes all of this cortisol.
Yeah.
And when you calm down, it slows it down.
Yeah.
So it's kind of helps you.
And they're dealing with lights and sirens, a dispatch call
right.
saying, hey, you got to get here right now. So all that is pumping everything up.
Exactly.
So if they can, mm-hmm. yeah. So
yeah, you're bringing up a good point. A lot of times we're looking for congruency in the person's presentation. So for example, if you work with couples, a lot of times there's no congruency between what I feel on the inside or what they show on the outside. On the inside, they may be hurting. On the outside, it's an anger or demand, right? So one of the goals is to kind of align what you feel,
yeah.
what you think, and what you express, that they're all aligned together. Because imagine your partner, they can't read your mind.
No.
When they see you angry, they don't see that vulnerable part of you that's saying, hey, I just need to hold your hand. I just need you to sit next to me. The only thing they see is an angry face, and that gets triggered also.
Yeah.
So being congruent. So if you're sad, your face actually shows that you're
yeah.
sad. When you feel scared, that you actually show that something's not right, is a big deal in improving couples' communication and giving them know this is what I'm going through right now.
Yeah, that community. Because I remember years back, just even when I was in a relationship a long time ago, before my wife. But I just remember thinking, don't you know what I'm thinking?
Don't you know what I need?
No, I don't.
And the bottom line is a lot of people say, well, if you love each other, you should be able to know how mm-hmm. the other person
yeah,
feels.
Right.
And that's mindset. Actually, it's a big trap.
Yeah.
It's a trap thinking that maybe we don't love each other. That's why we don't see. But what we find most of the time, it has nothing to do with this. You love a person, but you also need information.
Yes.
And without knowing what's happening with the person, that's why a partner who is pursuing this say, tell me how you feel. What's
yeah.
what's happening?
Yeah.
Can you talk to me? Why are you upset right now? And you're sitting there, I'm not upset. What?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, can you notify your face that you're not upset?
Yeah, I'm always like this. But yeah, that's, I guess, it is. The bottom line is sometimes we don't communicate. And then the other, I don't know if you see that in your practices, we see it in our area, the added communication through text. No inflections. Everyone's fighting.
Mm.
Why are you fighting? I don't know. He just seemed like he was angry because I saw, or she was angry because I saw capital letters. So, I mean, so I don't know if you guys see that because I'm sure your board members must text a lot.
Well,
wife and husband.
And with remote work environment, now more and more people are kind of like working at home. Absolutely, you get that disconnect happening.
Yeah.
And I tell my people, you know, you want one of the tips, right? Another tip is coming your way.
All right, write it down, people.
And, you know, one of the tips is to remind and articulate, Jack says, make implicit explicit, that you're important, that you're valued, that you matter, and I care. Those four things constantly have to be in your view to reassure the other person and also get reassurance for yourself.
Yeah.
That's how you're going to get back in balance.
Yeah.
And that's what the whole thing is. When you communicate, you're saying, like, it throws you off.
Yeah.
Because you lose that. You lose that.
Through
am I valued?
Yeah, I mean,
am I important?
Yeah.
Do you care? And do I matter?
Yeah.
Right? All of those questions come up.
And I can see it being super watered down through text or emails, which we communicate a lot. I mean, we have younger generations here that when you tell them, try calling that agency, I have to call them. I can't just email them or text them. So you lose a lot of that because you lose that vocal.
Oh, I want to tell you, Stuart, I'm teaching at Chapman, a leadership class, and I have 36 students, and they all on the computers on their phone. So I make them turn off your computers,
oh, wow.
phones.
Did they die?
Because I lose connection with them.
Yeah.
As a professor, I'm like, I don't want to go to my class because I can't see them. My brain says, danger. Danger. I don't get my... So at the end, they tell me, this is one of the best classes because we do that and we actually connect.
Yeah.
And it feels good and we feel safe.
Yeah. So, well, as you see the kids growing up now, that no one, they don't know how to communicate vocally. You know, it's all texting.
And I find this, what you mentioned, is such a big deal. I think you brought up such an important point. Couples don't realize how much text do not provide enough information to make decisions. As simple as I had one couple where... husband was traveling and for a few days, and he would send every evening good night message, and one time he didn't send the message, and then the wife thought something's wrong, something's terribly wrong. Is he upset at me? Is something happening? Right, and so she said she sent a message saying, "Are you okay?" And then he got angry. Because he's saying, what's wrong? What did I do wrong that you have to think that something's wrong with me, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's maybe emojis help a little bit, but I think the best way when you talk to your wife or your husband or your partner or your friend is to pick up the phone and just say hello and just figure out what's happening.
And even better now on travel is FaceTime. So my daughter has learned how to do FaceTime, and where are you? Talk to me. What you doing? She FaceTimed me when I have to travel a lot, which is really great to see.
But it also feels disconnection when you press a FaceTime and the other party doesn't want to do that.
Yes.
Right? Exactly. That feels... So it's very... We're so sensitive, and it's nothing wrong with it, but when that kind of shows that our need to be close to other people and our need to be able to see the faces and relate to faces, it's innate in us. We're born with this need. And when we try to fight it, it feels miserable.
Yeah.
So the goal is to actually, when somebody's trying to reach us, to be able to be there for them at that moment.
Yeah, and I think it's how our behaviors are, because we will assume what someone else is feeling, like you were saying. And then we were teaching in a classroom of individuals with developmental disabilities, and there was a girl who was on the spectrum, autism spectrum. She would go sit at lunch by herself and just sit there and draw and eat. And there were some peer educators in there, and there were some kids from other classes were helping, and they said, she just wants to be left alone. I go, no, that's maybe what our language speaks, but try sitting with her for the next week. And they said, as soon as they sat down with her, her body opened towards her, her writing towards her. She didn't say anything, she didn't do anything, but they felt like she was communicating and she was socializing with them, because we were thinking, she wanted to be left alone. Because like when some of us go off to, you just want to take a walk, you want to be alone. But that's where we were trying to see how that communication is.
Actually, the science shows that isolation is traumatizing for people. So if you leave people, and I tell this at workplaces, you know, don't leave people. People want to just be left alone. That's not what they want. They don't know how to deal with it. But and I like what Jack says, that the need for connection comes back. I mean, it's always innate with us. John Bowlby, who is a father of attachment theory, said that our need to connect goes from the cradle to the grave.
Mm.
It does not stop at age 12.
Yeah. No, I agree.
So that's definitely very important.
So, Lola, you've already given us two good points.
Yes.
We're going to start wrapping up. So, and Jack, I'm going to get to you with a couple points, too. So any more points that we can take either at our workplace or at home? Because everything, all that behavior is the same.
Well, one thing I want to say, that you don't have to suffer. There's a roadmap. There's a process that you can do to connect. And, check out my website, level5executive.com.
And her...
5 is spelled out. Trustmakers, is a book. We are third edition now. And, learn
third
about
edition?
Emotional connection.
So, yes, Lola is an author as well. All right, so the 3 she has is, and level 5...
Level5executive.com. And come to the training at Pepperdine University.
I know. I need to get to those.
Mastering Emotional Connection and train the trainer certification.
Yeah. Something I want to do. I put it the wrong date. So I think I actually emailed you. Hey, so is that class going on? That was last week. All right.
And I just had it last week, Stuart.
Did you again?
Stuart, people have said it's life-changing. It's really transformation for them.
Okay. Well, so. I definitely want to go there. Maybe I'll bring our staff. Mm-hmm. And Jack... any closing points for our audience?
Yeah, I would kind of look at couples who are currently struggling, couples that are having difficulties. You know, one of the things I would say, just be gentle to each other.
Yeah.
I know sometimes we fight because we want to protect ourselves, but the other person is suffering too. And also keep in mind that what you're feeling and what you experience is valid, and there's nothing wrong for you to feel this way, and nobody can tell you to feel any other way. And finally, get help early. Don't wait too long, because it's much harder to recover when you've already been fighting for years.
Yeah.
If you get a little difficulties in a relationship, it takes maybe one or two sessions to get you back on track, and you can continue your life without stress.
Yeah, I think people, if they had a pain or a infection, they would go quicker to the doctor.
Right.
Because if you wait, the same thing will happen. If you wait too long, it can get bad. That's sometimes we don't think about our emotional well-being. You know, and that's what we all need to work on. Because that's one of the biggest muscles in our body is our brain and our feelings.
And we also have a little bit of a stigma with going to couples therapy. That means something's wrong with it.
Yeah.
But, you know, when athletes go and get a coach, we don't say anything. Something wrong with athletes, right?
Yeah, exactly.
We say, this is awesome. You got a coach, right? But when couples go and get a coach or a therapist, people around them think, do you have a problem? Is something wrong?
Yeah, yeah.
No, we just want our life to be better. We want to enjoy each other. We want to have relationship satisfaction and be safe and comfortable with each other.
Yeah.
So seek help and find good therapist, and don't worry about changing therapist. If something doesn't work, go find somebody else.
Yeah, yeah. And that's how important it is. I had a friend who was a high-level athlete and went to a sports psychologist, and their game improved so much more because they were just dealing, because everyone deals with either nerves or self-confidence or anything, and it just helped. So, yes, I'm a fan of all this stuff for sure. All right. Lola pointed at Jack's notes. He needs something else?
Oh, his website, couplestlc.com.
Thank you, Lola.
She's
my best promoter.
Yeah, PR.
If you need additional help or you need to call in and just ask questions, you can call at 714-725-7121. And you can go on my website, couplestlc, tender loving care, .com.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Jack and Lola. And I'm going to give you our Changing Mindset, Changing Outcome mugs.
Wow. That's great. Thank you.
This is going to be my favorite. I love to drink tea.
I like the big one.
It's a gigantic
one. Oh, yeah. This is great.
But
thank you so much.
Thank you, Stuart.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for having us.
So thank you, everyone, for joining us. And for more information, go to getsafeusa.com. I'm Stuart Haskin. Thank you again for joining.